Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What's up, everyone? The special crossover episode, Silver Screen and Roll and Clips Nation, doing a thing, talking about the Lakers and the Clippers. I'm Siobhan, as always, and with me I have Sabrina from Clips Nation and from Silver Screen and Roll and from various other things. What's up, Sabrina?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I am doing all right. It's getting cold in the Midwest, and that's where I live right now, so that sucks. But aside from that, the Clippers have looked mostly okay, except for when... exception. Rob is also here. Rob, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm very tired because I was up late last night watching the horrible Clippers Suns game, doing the recap, doing a podcast. I didn't get to sleep till like 2:30, and it's really rough. I mean, it's first world problems, definitely, but I'm pretty tired.
I mean, yeah, I think we can all feel you as far as watching teams, doing some reporting and being up later than necessary for it. But that game was frustrating. We're here to talk about kind of the Lakers and the Clippers and just how they've looked and how they looked against each other. Sabrina, me and Rob kind of talked about it earlier in our previous pods as far as how the Clippers and the Lakers looked against each other. What did you feel about that game and how that game looked, even though it was a few days ago? How did you feel about that game?
I think... you have to feel really good as the Clippers coming out of that game, just because all of the weaknesses that the Lakers have, the Clippers appear very ready to pounce on every single one of them. Like the fact that the Lakers lack capable ball handlers. Well, the Clippers have a ton of perimeter players who are really good at applying pressure. And the fact that the Lakers are a little... Their defensive scheme, you know, is willing to allow mid-range jumpers. I mean, that just leaves tons and tons of space for Kawhi Leonard and Lou Williams to do their thing.
Right.
So, I mean, I know it's just the first game of the season, and these teams are going to look awfully different by the time the playoffs come around, or even by the time, like, Christmas comes around, which I believe is their second meeting. But it, I don't know, if I were a Laker fan, the Lakers should not feel very upset, very good about how that went down.
Right, right. And I think we've talked about also the Lakers' size. That was the first thing that we kind of noticed. Of course, they went to the post like a billion times in that first quarter. It was ridiculous. And they were fairly effective. I mean, they were winning that first quarter pretty easily until the bench mob came in and kind of cleaned things up a bit, made the score a little bit closer to end the first quarter. Now the Lakers have also played the Jazz, who have their own questions going in for that team, which is a separate podcast. But now that you've had another game to kind of watch the Lakers, and what have been your biggest strengths that you've kind of noticed, you know, aside from the obvious LeBron James and Anthony Davis, is that size factor like we kind of felt initially kind of the Lakers' MO as of now, aside from just doing obvious pick and roll over and over to death between Davis and LeBron?
Yeah, I honestly think the Lakers are better suited when they don't try to play big. Like that second half against Utah, the second game played this season, when they started with Anthony Davis at center and LeBron at power forward and then Danny Green at the three, I think that was their most effective lineup by far of, you know, the 96 minutes they played thus far. So, you know, obviously small sample sizes. Right. But, I mean... like, I understand that the Lakers are big and that's an advantage against certain opposition, but Anthony Davis is best utilized as a center. LeBron James is best utilized as a power forward. And they have enough perimeter players to make those lineups work, not for 48 minutes at a time, but for good chunks of a game. So I honestly like it better when they play a little bit smaller. I don't think that they're necessarily best suited to just go big all the time, because it's not like JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard are, you know, world beaters at the five. They're like perfectly adequate centers to play during an 82-game regular season. But even then, like, you're not going to get 48 good minutes out of the two of them combined in one game. So there's going to be plenty of opportunities for Davis to play center. And I think that's something that obviously he says he doesn't want to do, but he wants to win. And Frank Vogel needs to win to keep this job. So I imagine it's going to be happening more and more as the season progresses.
Yeah, feels like it. And Rob... I think we had a nice little shine after that Lakers win against the Warriors, where we just like beat the hell out of them, which proved not to particularly be the biggest aberration because Oklahoma City did it even more effectively today. The Warriors look like they have problems defending anything, and with their roster, it's not particularly surprising. Maybe the more eye-opening game was last night's game against a Phoenix team that, you know, maybe won't suck this year. I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, I think people are jumping a little bit ahead of themselves there as well. I think certainly Monty Williams will help a lot. He's a good coach. I thought he was always a good coach. I think one of the Pelicans' bigger mistakes of this decade was letting him go, even though Alvin Gentry is also a good coach. And certainly they've brought in some actual competent NBA rotation players like Dario Saric and Ricky Rubio and Aaron Baines, and those guys will all help a lot. I think we're jumping the gun a little. I mean, there's always a couple teams to start the year who look like they're going to be solid and then fall apart. The Grizzlies last year, I think, start out like 6-6 before collapsing. The Magic, like 2 or 3 years in a row, started out 8-4 or something before becoming awful. So, you know, it's still very early. This applies to the Clippers as well. But I think they'll definitely – I don't think there could be a gimme this year. I don't think they're necessarily going to be great, but they're certainly not going to be a pushover. And the Clippers were really bad. I thought the Suns played well, and they deserved the victory, but the Clippers, their defense was really bad. And offensively, I think the bench is going to put up numbers. You know, you have Lou and Trez and shooters. That's a winning formula. I think the starting lineup doesn't really have an identity yet, outside of Kawhi Leonard is really good, and he'll be able to score. That's something they need to build. Maybe that's something that will come just by adding in Paul George. I think they're a little bit to be concerned about through three games. I don't think there's anything earth-shattering, but I think, you know, there's some questions to be had about Zubac's role on the team, about what the Clippers are trying to do with Landry Shamet and his inability to really get open. Pat Beverly kind of passing up threes, which has happened in all three games so far and is something that can't happen. There are various minor things that are going on, but overall, I don't think Clippers fans should be feeling really one way or another. I thought the Lakers win was really good. The Warriors win looked good, but apparently they're not any good, so that doesn't matter. And then the Suns was a pretty bad loss. So in aggregate, I think they're coming out around even right now.
Yeah. Sabrina, do you have any thoughts about the Clippers just the last few games, aside from that Laker game? You see the Warriors game and yesterday's game maybe giving you some second thoughts as far as maybe initial impressions or just more of the same? What do you think, Sabrina?
I'm still a little surprised at how unfluid the offense looks whenever Lou Williams is not on the floor. Like, I just assumed that when Kawhi Leonard got here that whenever he was on the floor, the Clippers would look like world beaters. And not to say that that can't be the case, but it's just when Lou's not on the court, the offense sticks a little. And it kind of makes me realize that there were a lot of really good playmakers in that Toronto starting lineup, like Lowry and even Gasol and Siakam can do things. And the Clippers don't really have that in their starting lineup. And I mean, obviously this will look very different when Paul George joins. So it's not like an immediate concern, but like that Laker game, Lou had to play 37 minutes in game one of the season, which is astounding. And I mean, obviously he's available to do that in the playoffs. Like, it's not a problem. He doesn't look like he ever even breaks a sweat, frankly. But just the fact that the offense still seems very dependent on him was a little weird.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how much the Clippers have changed, but they almost haven't changed because we had a lot of these same questions last year with the starting lineup last year, particularly before the trade, the midseason trade, and even after the midseason trade, where it felt like a lot of our offense came from our second unit. And now, you know, I think they put 60-plus each game, the bench have. And the starters, you know, haven't looked terrible, but it's just a lot of Kawhi watch. And I think we kind of expected to do some of that ISO ball with Kawhi coming in, but it's been a lot of it. And, you know, Rob, we were all already talking about the lack of fluidity that we were preparing to see with Kawhi Leonard, a ball stopper kind of coming to this team. And initially, you know, he's had some great assist numbers, but, you know, that first unit kind of looks like Sabrina's saying, a little step slow without Lou Williams in there running his usual pick and rolls. And then when Lou doesn't have it, like he didn't have it yesterday, the team kind of looks a mess. This clearly will change with Paul George coming to the roster. You know, it's easy to forget that Paul George is just waiting in the wings. He's another, obviously, a very good playmaker. But it does leave some questions as far as what the Clippers need to do going forward. What should you think? There are any obvious rotation changes for Doc before Paul comes back?
I think, you know, Chris wrote an article. God bless Chris. He's such an optimist.
right.
On Clips Nation about Patrick Patterson. And I do think, considering, yeah, you know, that they picked him up at the end of summer on a minimum after two really, really bad seasons in Oklahoma City, especially last season, he was not an NBA level player. Considering that, I think he's been really good so far, but he should not be starting on this team. I don't get it. I think Doc is trying to preserve the second unit as it is, which is Lou, Mo, Trez, and Jamichael Green, which might be an indicator that when Paul George does come back, that they're going to start him and Kawhi at the 3 and 4 and maintain Beverly and Shamet, and that he's doing this to kind of keep those rotations intact. But I just don't get it. Patrick Patterson is not nearly as good a player as Maurice Harkless or Jamichael Green. He should not even be a token starter. One of those guys should be starting. If Doc really wants to play him just for size and, you know, his shooting, he can get some minutes off the bench. But I think he's, you know, it's hard to blame him because he's being asked to do something he's not really capable of, but he's just not a starting level player. He can't take anybody off the dribble, and he's tried a few times to attack closeouts, and it's really tough to watch. He's really slow. Pairing him with Ivica Zubac, who I think has been, you know, kind of like last year, has been a little inconsistent in game to game in terms of effectiveness, and Pat Beverly, who is an underrated playmaker and offensive, you know, player in general, but is not really somebody who's going to create offense, and Landry Shamet, who's struggling, and it really is all in Kawhi to do stuff right now, and that's part of the problem. So I think adding Jamichael Green, I think really Mo Harkless is the answer, to be honest, just because I think that'll juice the defense a little bit more. And I think he has at least somewhat more ball handling / passing capabilities than Green or Patterson. Certainly not a guy you want to rely on, but maybe a little bit more offensive firepower. So I'd say that, but I think really it's just about getting Landry Shamet going. He's been really quiet, and it's kind of the issue with these guys. The Clippers ran into this all the time when they had J.J. Redick.
Right.
That when you rely on these off-ball shooters to get going, if they're unable to get untracked, it stagnates the whole offense because you're waiting 10 seconds for them to run around all these screens, and then they don't get open, and all of a sudden, you know, there's 9 seconds left on the shot clock, and you're scrambling to make something work. And that's happened a bunch already. I think teams are doing a really good job at shutting Shamet down. They've scouted him. They have a whole year of reporting on him. So I think that's part of the issue. And I think an underrated thing that, you know, Sabrina did mention is that people really underestimate how good the Raptors were last year.
Yeah.
You know, this is a team that beat two legitimate title contenders before even facing down the Warriors. You know, the Bucks and Sixers last season were both really, really good teams, and the Raptors beat both of them, and they beat the Bucks by the end of it kind of handily. And I'm not in the school of camp, but thinks if Clay is healthy that the Warriors win. I think the Raptors win that anyway. Kyle Lowry is probably the most underrated NBA player of this decade. Pascal Siakam is – he looks like an all-NBA player this year, all-defense-level player. You know, Marc Gasol was really good last year. Fred VanVleet, you know, they had all these guys and all these ball handlers and playmakers, and the Clippers just don't right now. So I think while Kawhi has – looked really impressive in terms of just sheer passing, in terms of handling an offensive load by himself, I think it does look a little stagnant and a little ISO heavy. So I think a lot of it will just determine on when Paul George comes back. In the meantime, I don't think they have a ton of options, but I would probably take Patterson out.
Yeah, I think the idea of taking Patterson out, putting Harkless in, Harkless, who's looked very good most of the time this whole season, I would also appreciate that. Also had the double tap, which has gotten me so excited a couple of games ago.
Yeah, that was really awesome.
That was super cool. And I know that Trez does it, but he kind of does like his own version of it, mm-hmm. whereas Mo just straight up did the double tap from the Miles Q Rich era, which is super cool. I can't wait to, I hope they kind of cover that on their Knuckleheads pod. If they do, that'd be super, super cool. Sabrina, let's see. I kind of want to mention the Lakers a little bit here too, since we wanted to talk about both teams a bit. Have you noticed anything that they've changed since that Clipper game that has kind of popped up? Is Avery Bradley the answer? Sorry, I can't stop.
We need to stop.
Yeah.
Avery Bradley, is Avery Bradley the answer? That wasn't a legitimate question, right?
Yeah, it was.
Kind of. Oh, okay. I mean, Avery Bradley being the starting point guard, like, it's fine. You know, I feel like he definitely thinks that he's capable of doing more than he actually is, but on a team with Anthony Davis and LeBron, I feel like that's tempered ever so slightly. Like, there were definitely players on the Clippers better than him last year, but, like, not ones with the reputation of Anthony Davis and LeBron. So he kind of, like, can't afford to go off the way he has in previous situations, or, you know, like, handle the ball the way he did in Memphis, because there's just no opportunity for that. And I think Vogel's done a decent job of not really giving him the green light to do anything yet. So that's nice. Defensively, I mean, I guess he's been fine. Like, the solution for the Lakers really is just to play more Alex Caruso. Like, that's the very clear solution.
Right, right.
And, but the problem
that's that's not even a joke, right? Like, that's like the legitimate answer.
Yeah. The problem is like, there just aren't enough healthy perimeter players with Kuzma and Rondo out to avoid playing Bradley. And like, whatever he takes away, you know, on offense, like he's kind of been okay on defense this season, and like certainly better than Quinn Cook and Troy Daniels have been thus far.
Right.
So as much as like, I don't think Avery Bradley is the answer in a playoff rotation, I think for the time being, the Lakers are sort of stuck with him, and you know, it is what it is.
How does it feel like rooting for a team where your best player is Danny Green?
Danny Green is awesome.
He's really good.
I sort of got over that. See, the thing is, okay, I went to Duke, obviously, and Danny Green and I overlapped for 2 years when he was at Carolina.
Oh, I did not know this.
Yes. And so he, along with Tyler Hansbrough, was part of a group that won 4 straight games at Duke. So 2 of them when I was there, and just really obnoxious. One of those players you just really grow to hate. But I don't know if this ever happens to you, Rob, like when you are so aggressively anti somebody in college and then like they get to the professional level and there's no good reason for you to hate them anymore. So all of that emotion has to go somewhere. And so I've really just gone full circle on Danny, like even when he was on San Antonio, just one of my favorite players to watch in the league. And he's just damn good. Like
he's really, really good.
If you were capable of playing like 30 plus minutes regularly, you know, like that would be great. I know they're trying to limit him sub 30, you know, which makes sense. He's like 33 years old. It's important to pace yourself this season. It's just the Lakers look so much better when he's on the court versus not on the court. He does everything right. Like, I mean, he obviously can't handle the ball that well, but there were some moves where he like attacked closeouts against the Clippers or, you know, he's always in the right spot. Like he cuts, he keeps the ball moving. He defensively, like he can guard up a position. I just rarely find myself watching Danny Green and think like, oh, I would have done that differently. Like those situations just don't exist.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason he was a very key part of 2 championship teams. He's really, really good. And I thought it was hilarious during the summer when everybody is, you know, the big three with LeBron, AD, and Kyle Kuzma. And like, is Kyle Kuzma ready to be the third best? It's like, pump the brakes a little bit. Danny Green is way better than Kyle Kuzma.
Oh, yeah,
right now.
Absolutely.
And I say that as somebody who actually likes Kyle Kuzma. Like, he seems like a really cool guy. He definitely has a lot of talent. And I think defensively, he's probably better than the jokes make him out to be. But he is not as good as Danny Green.
No, on
either end of the court. And
especially not as like a complimentary piece.
Right. To those, yeah. So I mean, Danny Green's really good. As for the question about college, you know, it's tough. I mean, I hated Draymond Green in college, and I continue to hate Draymond Green.
Okay, yeah. But he's also, like, still, like, on a rival team to the Clippers, right?
Yeah. So that's different. Gary Harris was really good at MSU and always just vaguely annoyed me, but he's really fun to watch. I really like him on the Nuggets. So I guess that's the closest kind of comparison. Like Gary Harris is really fun. I also love Jaren Jackson Jr. Even though he's a little after my time at when he was at MSU. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's tough for me just because I'm very into Michigan, but I don't watch like that much college basketball, like maybe 15 to 20 games a year for Michigan. Like, and I don't get too wrapped up in it just because college basketball is like almost a different sport in just game to game results and how just weird stuff happens that would not happen in the NBA. But yeah, I mean, every once in a while that happens. So I definitely understand the love for a former, you know, hated adversary. I think it happens with JJ Redick all the time, where he just comes into places and it's like, oh, that guy, he was on deep forever ago. Everybody hated him. And it's like, no, JJ Redick is like really good. And like, everybody just kind of likes him. So I don't think it's that weird. I think the college prejudice kind of stuff fades away.
I went to UC Irvine. So aside from being a decent stopping ground for some kids of Caron Butler and Doc Rivers, it's not really a great place for college sports. We decided to make a science library instead of having a football team many years ago.
Very nice. Smart decision. But I think
history is going to look well on that decision.
Yeah, I hope so. I think so. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think something that was really interesting about the Clippers Lakers game, returning to that a little, is that it was a really good showcase of the weaknesses of each team as well as the strengths. You know, as Sabrina mentioned, the Clippers were really able to attack with their size on the wings and exploit the Lakers' lack of wing depth and size there outside of Danny Green. And then the Lakers, I mean, went to the post too much, but they were able to show how you can kind of take advantage of the Clippers' big man on the inside. I don't think AD or LeBron is remotely afraid of driving into the paint against anybody on the Clippers roster. And that's something that's kind of borne out the past couple games as well, especially yesterday. But I just don't know. I mean, do you think when push comes to shove that Anthony Davis will play the five in big minutes, or is that something that does seem kind of insurmountable at this point?
Yeah, I think he's absolutely going to be playing the five in clutch time for important games. Like, I understand why the Lakers wouldn't want to do that to start the season, because they did pay a lot of lip service to the fact that they were trying to make Anthony Davis happy and he doesn't want to play center. So I guess game two was the right answer for that situation. But it just sucks because like the Lakers built their roster this season. I mean, I have a lot of questions about how they built their roster, but there definitely was a consideration like, we're going to be playing Anthony Davis at power forward, so we should put our resources into building lineups where Anthony Davis is the power forward, and that leaves you with this lack of wing depth, like you mentioned, right? Like, it's just like this glut of guards that can't play the three. And even Danny Green's like not technically a three, but he can resemble one on occasion, right? Like when he guarded Kawhi Leonard, it was fine. Obviously, nobody can really effectively guard Kawhi Leonard one-on-one. Nobody's asking Danny Green to do that, but he's capable of making things at least a little challenging for Kawhi, make him expend a little effort, which is all you really want. And he's the only guy on the Lakers that can do that. And it's just impossible to imagine, like, when the Clippers have Paul George, there aren't two players. I mean, if LeBron's not going to play defense during the regular season, which thus far it seems like he doesn't want to play defense during the regular season, I don't see how you're going to have enough wing defenders to not just completely run Danny Green into the ground or give up a lot of points during the regular season.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that I kind of noticed, and the Lakers kind of went away from probably because the Clippers were packing the paint, how often can you just post up Anthony Davis like without him just falling apart? And it's kind of like one of my questions, because I feel like effectively nobody can guard him in the post. If you force him outside in perimeter and let him take shots, it's kind of what you want to do. But, you know, the idea after that Clipper game is like, well, they didn't get him in the post enough. They probably should have kept getting him in the post because nobody's tall enough to guard him. But how much of that is his game? How good of a passer could he even be to, like, JaVale McGee in that kind of, you know, mini, not short roll, but just when they'll double team him on the post with a defender, whoever's guarding McGee, how good of a passer is he? And then I think I just have some questions about how good Davis is in this system. And have you kind of felt as far as what he can do and his capabilities as far as being a number one option on a team like this?
I think ideally he and LeBron would just run pick and rolls to death.
Right. And, that too.
I mean, that seems like the best situation, but understandably that puts a lot of toll on LeBron to run that offense over and over again, because Davis is not going to be the ball handler in a majority of those possessions. So that's tricky without, you know, Rondo in the starting lineup, because nobody else really knows how to run a pick and roll there. I thought he was really good in the post. I mean, obviously it's not like the most beautiful basketball to watch. Mucks up the game a little bit. It also seems like it's quite a physical burden on Davis to keep posting up over and over again, like, especially when you have, for whatever Patrick Patterson's faults are, he's a bulky enough guy, you know. So that's a hard thing to do possession after possession, is continuously post up. And for a team that wants to preserve Anthony Davis and, like, you know, is trying to prevent him from having to deal with the wear and tear of playing the five, that seems like a strange way of going about it, to just make him post up like a center does anyway and continue to handle that physical stress. Like, I think we were talking about this in the Silver Screen chat the other day. He still has to, like, work incredibly hard on offense in that system, whereas it seems like if they were to play pick and roll more often, that would be less of a physical burden on him. And maybe the floor would open up a little bit more if they did play him at the five, which is, it's not counterintuitive, it's just like a weird way of thinking about, like, the positionless basketball that works in the NBA now. And, like, posting him up over and over again, like, I get that works most of the time, but, like, it just completely marginalizes whatever JaVale McGee can do. Like, it doesn't really make sense for him to be out there. And it's a work in progress, right? Like, two games in. And, like, obviously they found things that work for Davis, which is great. Like, you want to find things that you can come back to, but there's still a lot of experimenting to be done in order to make this more efficient for everyone involved.
I think the question, just kind of in general for people in Los Angeles, is how these two teams match up and what they're going to do going forward. I guess I can start with you, Sabrina. Do you see the Lakers possibly as being a top three seed this season once they work their kinks out? Where do you see them kind of falling as the season goes on? Obviously, it's early. We can't say for certain. There's a billion things that can happen. So many intangibles. But regular season-wise, where do you kind of see them falling as the year goes on?
So I started the season thinking they'd sort of land in the 4-5 range, around like 51, 52 wins. And I haven't really seen anything to, you know, go away from that prediction so far. I just don't think they have the depth to really last in the regular season like teams like Denver or even the Clippers, or just someone who cares about the regular season as much as James Harden does in Houston. So that's sort of where I see them landing, that 4-5. And yeah, I mean, I still think they're good enough to land there, and it shouldn't be an issue if they have like the 4 seed in one round of home court in the playoffs.
Yeah, I like them 4-5. Rob, where do you think the Lakers are going to land once the dust settles?
Probably around that area. They're going to win a lot of regular season games just because of LeBron and AD.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say like low 50s wins total. I think they and the Clippers are going to be right in the same ballpark. Clippers maybe a little bit ahead due to their bench. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I'd say both teams probably anywhere from 3-5. So yeah, I mean, I'd say low 50s. You know, a decent seed. I don't think the Lakers are really afraid of any Western Conference team except maybe the Clippers. So I don't think they care about seeding that much. I mean, LeBron historically has not really cared about seeding, right. Even though he's maybe not prime LeBron, I don't think he's necessarily going to start caring about that right now. Like, I don't think they're worried about playing the Nuggets in Denver or something. Or I was going to say the Jazz. I mean, the Jazz have not looked great so far, but
yeah,
really any of those teams. I just don't think they are remotely scared of any of them. So, and I don't think the Clippers are really scared of any other team either. Maybe not even the Lakers. So, I honestly
not even the Suns.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, they were not anticipating the Javon Carter show on defense. Or the
Carter is so bad, man.
He's really bad. I tweeted that from the Clips Nation account.
Right. What, Sabrina?
When he was like pulling up from threes, I was like, I mean, I guess Rubio doesn't do this.
Yeah. Yeah. He's really bad. Yeah. Anyways, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think both teams are very confident and for good reason going into the season. And I think so far, a lot of what we've seen has done a lot to kind of emphasize that, because I think a lot of teams that were supposed to be good haven't really looked that good. The Nuggets, I think, have they only played once or twice? I haven't really caught up with much of the Nuggets. I don't think they've been particularly awesome. The Jazz have kind of struggled. The Rockets have been good, but not really great yet. Mm. And outside of that, I mean, those were kind of considered the top five teams. I mean, Portland is a tier below. The Thunder have been shaky. The Kings have been awful. You know, I mean, the Mavs look good, but I just don't think they have enough around Doncic and Porzingis to really be much more than a low-tier playoff team. So, I mean, I think the Clippers and Lakers both have weak spots and honestly pretty glaring ones right now. But their high-end talent is so good. I just don't know if it'll matter even now and especially going forward, because I think one or both of those teams will see upgrades during the regular season. So, and it's very early, but
it's tough to say.
Yeah, do you think – what do you think, like, the logical move would be for the Lakers in terms of adding to the roster outside of Andre Iguodala, who is really the most logical for either team? But outside of him, like, is there a move out there that could help the Lakers and kind of bolster their weaknesses?
The thing is, like, wing defenders are kind of unicorns out there. You know, like, it's very hard to find a player who – fits that 3-and-D mold, which is what the Lakers would need. Like, that's the player. They need, like, a second Danny Green, basically. And, I mean, like you said, Iguodala fits their weaknesses so perfectly because he serves as that secondary ball handler, too, in the second unit that they don't appear to have right now. Just looking at the rest of the market, it doesn't seem like there's a player that fits all of their needs simultaneously. Let's say like Memphis decides that they can part ways with Jay Crowder. That might be a nice fit in LA because, again, he has the size to sort of defend wing players. And I don't think he's going to get a first rounder or anything fantastic as an expiring contract in a trade.
Yeah.
So that's sort of a name that I've thought about. But, I mean, really, they just got to hope that Kuzma looks really good when he comes back. Or, I don't know, maybe like – they use Norvell a little bit more as a playmaker.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's slim pickings, man. Like they had a lot of eggs riding in the DeMarcus Cousins basket.
That was tough.
That was stupid.
Yeah, yeah, it was a really dumb decision by them. But I mean, I don't think they could have anticipated what happened.
Right.
At least not the off the court stuff. I think the injury they could have very easily foreseen. But that was really puzzling because they really had a ton riding on him in terms of him being the only guy outside of Kuzma with really any upside on that entire roster, outside of, you know, the young, really young guys who'd be shocking if they contributed. It's like, if the Lakers are going to be really good, it's probably because DeMarcus Cousins looks really good. And that seemed a pretty foolish bet to be making. And it's cost them, I think. So we'll see. I mean, I think the things just kind of always work out for the Lakers. I'm expecting somehow for that to happen. And I think if there was a buyout, I think Iggy would actually go to the Lakers over the Clippers. I think
seems like it.
There's more of a role there for him. He just seems more like a Lakers kind of guy, to be quite honest. But it's hard to put into words or really anything but a gut instinct.
Sounds like a standard Clippers defeatism.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, I think also the Clippers, just like, I mean, obviously you need Andre Iguodala, but for the Clippers, he's definitely more of a luxury that would really help them. For the Lakers, he's kind of they kind of need him.
Yeah, I just think he'll have more of an opportunity, and that'll be apparent to him. So that's kind of how I feel. That's why he might pick the Lakers versus the Clippers. We have just a billion wings that we can, like, would you really want to play Iguodala ahead of Mo Harkless in the regular season? I don't know, you know.
I mean, actually right now, maybe, because the thing the Clippers are kind of lacking is playmaking and passing.
Oh, sure, right.
But that
sure.
should be alleviated when Paul George comes back.
Yeah,
exactly.
But, I mean, I think he'd still play over – I mean, right now, Doc is riding 9 guys, which is also really weird.
Yeah, all of the Terrence Mann hype has gone nowhere.
That was very interesting to me because very they quick. Were talking him up so big, and he has barely played – and he's just played in garbage time. I thought that was really interesting. I mean, there was also a lot of stuff about Jerome Robinson having a great summer. Haven't seen him.
Sure.
yeah, I didn't buy any of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really either, but, you I mean, Mann right. really had a lot of – buzz around him, and I did think the last couple preseason games he wasn't nearly as sharp, but I'm still really surprised that he's gone with a strict 9-man rotation in all 3 games. I think
Mann almost had like that Shea level buzz,
yeah,
without the pedigree of being a first rounder, obviously.
Yeah, and I think all the Mann to Shea comparisons look really bad right now, 3 games into the season.
Yeah,
and Shea looks like an all-star like this year. Well, and Mann is riding the pine.
Well, what? I do think we're running a little bit low on time, so I'm going to let Sabrina go. Thanks for joining us, Sabrina. And I think we'll save our predictions for a possible Lakers versus Clippers series until later, because it's going to be very premature right now.
Okay, I'm happy to come back whenever.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably have you on whenever there's a Lakers-Clippers matchup, just around then.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And we can talk it up. And yeah, it's good to get some crossover buzz and just – so it's not just the two of us being sad and defeated. All the time.
Thanks, Sabrina.
Just about a championship contender.
Sure, we'll see. All right, until next time, Sabrina. See you. Thank you
bye,
again.
Guys.
Bye. All right, so a little bit about those last couple of games. We talked in depth for that Laker-Clipper game quite a bit. We probably won't even mention the Lakers now until we see them in Christmas, or I think that's the next game. As far as the Clippers have looked, well, you know, they looked great against the Warriors. That was a fun game. I enjoyed it a lot when it was happening, and pretty much everybody played super well. How do you feel about that Warriors game, Rob? It's kind of tough now in context of what they just happened to them today when they got blown out by OKC, but
yeah,
how was that game for you?
And I still don't think it takes away from the fact that the Clippers played very well.
Right.
I think they came in with a really good game plan. Their defense on Steph was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they attacked the Warriors' weaknesses very well. I mean, I think they played really well. I don't think that should be taken away. That said, the Warriors look like garbage right now. So the offense in particular, I think maybe there shouldn't be as big a takeaway on how easily the Clippers were able to score, because a Thunder team that just lost at home to the Washington Wizards was able to beat the Warriors by like 30 points. So, yeah, things are not going great up north in the Bay Area. But still, I mean, Kawhi looked great. Lou and Trez continued to play really well. Patrick Patterson had the game of maybe not his life, but of probably the past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, every time the Warriors kind of made a push in the first half and early in the third quarter, the Clippers would respond, and then they kind of just blew the doors off. JaMychal Green was also really good. Really, everybody who played for the Clippers in their 9-man rotation was good. But did you have any particularly strong takeaways? I really didn't. I just thought the biggest highlight was probably their defense on Steph. I thought they did a really excellent job at limiting him.
It was great seeing Sham guard Steph again and knowing that he could do an effective job even this time around. You know, Steph is still Steph. He's going to get off against anybody. But I thought Sham just had a great – that's the kind of guy Sham is good at guarding. There aren't many guys like Steph who he can chase off of screens and stay in front of. And Steph isn't particularly strong of build. I think we saw that pretty quickly when Sham tried to guard Booker, that, you know, Booker just kind of bullied him a little bit and got to his spots, whereas Steph can't really do that. So he is a good guard for somebody like Steph. And I think Sham's, you know, confidence has gone up just guarding Steph in general after guarding Steph. So that's super cool. And it was also great seeing the offense kind of percolate the most when Sham hit those back-to-back threes. And I feel like that's when we really got rolling. He had that one awesome three where he got a couple of picks and went across the floor for a corner three. That was just like picture perfect Redick-esque play that you'd see. And he nailed it. And I felt like the team really just got rolling around that time and just blew the socks off the Warriors. Aside from that, you know, it was cool that Kevin Gelly got the game ball from Pat. That was also a nice little bit that the Clippers did on their social media. Motley and Rome and Kevin Gelly all hit threes, which is all kind of cool. And the team just played well. Even Bev, who didn't shoot particularly well, had his imprints all over the game. Everyone else just did a really good job. And Kawhi had 9 assists, which he topped the next game. And Zubat had a really good showing, 16 and 10, limited minutes, which Doc mentioned was good for his confidence and good for Doc even, just to watch him do so well. Mo Harkless continued to look good. Everybody played well. So there's really not much to say. It felt like a scrimmage by the end of it because there was just no defense. Yeah,
the last quarter and a half was a dunk fest. It was really like preseason.
It was really, really bad. Like,
awful. Yeah. I think, you know, Shamus' defense was definitely very good. And I could not agree more. I wrote this in the game preview for the Suns game, but really, and we talked about this with Sabrina too, but the Clippers offense really only looks really good when Shamet gets going. And actually when they started playing better against the Lakers, it was also when Shamet hit a shot or two and really became more involved in the offense. And that's really when it seems like everything starts coming together. And when he's able to get open, either teams close out too hard and he's able to get free and the offense kind of gets rolling and attacking switches and closeouts, or he's able to just make shots and, you know, points add up as a result of that. And when he's not, it's basically like the Clippers are playing not 4-on-5 because he's dragging a defender along with him, but they're waiting for this action that's not developing.
Right.
And they just don't have that many other offensive threats on the court outside of Kawhi. So they really need to do something to try to get him going. I know it's only 3 games, but he's been really quiet so far. Probably, I'd say, a quieter 3-game stretch than any he had with the Clippers last year after the trade deadline.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily bet on it, but it wouldn't surprise me. So I think getting him going is a real key because I absolutely agree. When he's been on, the few times where he's been able to connect and really get involved in the offense so far, that's when the Clippers' starting unit actually looks good.
Yeah. So Sham's going to have to be important. I think Doc, I'm sure Doc knows that from so many years of Sham, not just Sham, but JJ. And we really were just ball watching with JJ so many times when Redick would just run off of screens and you would just see, especially if Paul wasn't handling the ball, which usually he was, but it's a lot of watching JJ. I watched JJ probably almost more than any other Clipper, I feel like, when he was a Clipper, because I just watched him move off screens all the time and just seeing what gravity he pulled with him. And it kind of got like that with Sham a lot last year, and maybe not so much with him this year because I watched Kawhi a lot more when I'm watching the ball. But still, he's definitely an important piece. This Suns game, I mean, was rough.
It was really bad.
It was bad. There were so many open threes. It just felt like the Suns were just moving really well, and the Clippers just lost them all the time. What were your takes?
I don't think there's any grandiose takeaway from this. I think this is probably a game that they actually would have won last year because they would not have been, for one, they're not like this team with a target on their backs, and two, they never, that I can really remember, showed up not looking ready to play last year. I'm sure it happened, but I don't remember it happening quite like this, where it just seemed very visible that they did not take the Sun seriously and didn't seem to have practiced for them or prepped for them. And just the Suns just ran them off the court, really. I mean, it ended up being pretty close and the Suns didn't really blow them out, but they were in control for basically the entire game, I'd say, and definitely all of the second half. And the Clippers never seriously looked like they were going to win that one. It just, the Suns looked better. They looked hungrier. And that's not something that ever happened last year. The Clippers were the hungry team. And that's something I think we do need to watch this year. That being said, I think it could be a wake-up call of sorts. I think the Clippers were very unhappy after the game. I'm sure Doc absolutely lay into them. Kawhi seemed very, you know, disappointed and just frustrated at the effort. So I'm not necessarily sure this happens again anytime soon, but it is something to keep an eye on because this is a team now with a lot of pedigree, and they're not the underdog. They're the favorite. And that, you know, even with guys as tough and energetic as Beverly and Trez and really the rest of the roster, sometimes you can get complacent, especially after two really good wins to start the season.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully this is just kind of a swift kick in the butt for the Clippers. It was really rough watching the defense. It just felt like somebody was running off the screen really aggressively, and one Clipper wouldn't follow, and then it would just kind of slide over to all these missed rotations, and Frank Kaminsky hit shooting like five open 3-pointers, and it was really frustrating to watch. At the same time, like, I was just kind of giving kudos to the Suns. The Suns just played their asses off, and they're playing really hard. You could tell they wanted this game, every single player on their team. So kudos to them. But at the same time, it was just frustrating to watch the Clippers miss so many assignments on defense and just kind of not rotate. And not there was, I think there was one time to close where Pat Patterson wasn't sure who to cover because Lou Williams was covering an angle three, and then they swung into the corner. I think I'm not sure if it was Booker or maybe Johnson. Somebody hit a huge 3-pointer from the corner, and Pat Patterson was like shuffling his feet, thinking that Lou was going to swing over to the corner and that he would guard the angle three, and then it just left like a completely wide open three-pointer in the corner that like buried the Clippers some more. It was just so many of those type of plays over and over again. It was frustrating, but at the same time, you know, it's the regular season. Like, those games happen. It's easy to get like really upset about one game in the course of a season and say, oh no, this could hurt our, you know, our tiebreakers and our standings and all this stuff. But you're going to have one of these games, especially against a team like the Suns, who seem to be semi upstarty right now, as far as the teams that might not be expecting them to punch them in the face. So I was frustrated, but as the day went on, I was just kind of like, yeah, you know, it happens.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that for the most part. It was an awful game to watch, but I'm not really taking too much else away from that. As a general rule, I don't have too much to say about individual players outside of what I've said on Shamit. Luke struggled quite a bit yesterday against Javon Carter, but still ended up with good numbers just because that's how good he is. I think Zoo has kind of been, I don't know, apparently I'm lower on him. I mentioned in my game recap yesterday that he was outplayed by the Suns centers, and apparently a lot of people did not agree with that. I don't know, maybe I was just not watching him, or maybe I'm biased and just seeing what I want to see. He has not impressed me against either the Lakers or the Suns. I don't think he's been outright awful or anything. I just don't think he's really made much an impact. What have you thought of him, especially what do you think of him yesterday against the Suns? I just want to see if I'm not the only one who thought he was kind of underwhelming.
Oh, sure. Wait, which player?
No, this is Zubats.
Zubat? Yeah, I mean, I was not impressed with him yesterday, and he missed Kaminsky a bunch, and he showed this last year. I mean, I remember Brook Lopez was a prime example. He's slow to kind of realize that he needs to guard the three-pointer, and he missed that assignment quite a few times yesterday. And I know that he had some offensive rebounds, I feel like, and some nice swats at the ball or whatever, but I was not keen on keeping him in the game particularly, especially when you keep in mind the Lou and Trez synergy. I just wasn't upset. I think I saw some comments on Clips Nation too. It was talking about needing Zubat in the game, and I wasn't upset about that. The weirdest thing to me was when Kawhi was taken out at like 4 minutes and then not put back in for 2 minutes. Doc kind of mentioned that he didn't expect us to win the game at that time, but still, like, that was the weirdest thing to me rotation wise. I mean, and of course Pat getting like fucking 17 minutes in the second half is ridiculous.
Yeah, I just don't get it with Patterson. Like, I think on the whole he's been fine. Warriors explosion, which is undoubtedly going to be a unique occurrence this year aside, like, he's been fine against the Suns and the Lakers. But he's just so slow on both ends of the court. He's just not a threat offensively unless he's wide open from three. And even then, I don't think teams are exactly that worried about him. Defensively, I think he's really more of a center than anything else at this point. Like, he's so slow on the perimeter. He's best, like, he he was deployed against the Lakers, where in hindsight, it looks like Doc was smart to play him because that's where he's good, is, you know, fighting guys off in the post because he's big and he's bulky. But in terms of defending out on the perimeter, which is something he used to be pretty good at, I just don't really see it anymore. So I just don't get it with him. I think that should be Mo Harkless starting, or if not him, then JaMychal Green. I would also be curious to get more looks at guys like Terrence Mann off the bench and go with maybe like a Lou, Mann, Harkless, Green, Trez, and then one of the other starters. If Doc wants to go nine men, I'd kind of be interested in seeing Mann or maybe even Jerome over Patrick Patterson just to help juice up the offense a little bit with some ball handling and playmaking. And what do you think about Doc's overall rotations and going with a nine-man rotation? I think it's been kind of weird, to be honest.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I mean, cutting out Mann entirely was kind of weird to me, especially considering all the hype going into him, like we kind of mentioned earlier, especially the fact that we kind of need another playmaker, and Mann is shown to be fairly competent with some good instincts. I guess that he's a rookie, he's a second rounder, so it's easy not to be completely, you know, in love with the idea of playing him substantial minutes. Rome, even, I feel like, has gotten a billion chances, and maybe Doc just got to the point where he's just like, you know what, I'm tired of giving this guy chances, which I can kind of understand. But, you know, he's shown some flashes. I think the biggest thing to me, I would start Mo Harkless unless we had like a situation where we needed somebody to guard an Anthony Davis type like Pat Patterson. I think the idea to start Patterson then and to give him the minutes we gave him wasn't the worst idea against the Lakers, but against smaller teams, I don't understand the idea of starting him. I would start Mo, particularly because I think JaMychal has a bit of rapport with Lou and Trez. I don't mind the idea of maybe keeping him off the bench. Now, it's a very like thin line as far as who to start between Mo and JaMychal to me. I wouldn't mind either way, but I think against the league today, which tends to be small anyways, I would probably lean towards Mo. And just his switchability is really useful. As far as Doc's rotations and the nine man rotation, I don't know. I think I wouldn't mind seeing Mann particularly get some minutes and to see how he can do, especially just to take the playmaking burden a little bit off, especially if we can mix him around with maybe having him in there when Lou isn't in there or something along those lines, or even with Lou. Because I feel like when Lou's in the game, he's going to have the ball a ton. And I don't know what we're going to do to prevent that when Lou is in the game, you know? So Lou is just such a ball heavy guy when he's playing, especially when it's him and Trez and Kawhi isn't in there. Like, we're running the offense through him and through that pick and roll normally, or through whatever shiftiness Lou's going to do. So at that point, you know, how useful Mann would be is kind of uncertain, but if there are minutes where Lou's off the floor and Kawhi's on the floor and we can get Mann in there, or even I guess Jerome, I think that would be the most ideal. And that's really just spot minutes, like 5 to 7 minutes, you know? So I think that would be the best wrinkle that maybe we could do as far as the rotation goes and just get a 10th guy in there. Aside from that, I mean, I'm not too frustrated with the rotations. I feel like there's still some ironing out to do. Initially, I thought that Kawhi would be given like kind of the Chris Paul kind of gloves going, where he would be out at the end of the first and then back at the 9-minute mark of the second quarter or something along those lines. But then they changed that up a little bit in the Suns game. So how we're going to handle his minutes, plus Doc mentioned a 30 to 35 minute restriction on Kawhi last game. So I don't know. I feel like there's still some ironing out to be done. And especially if Pat is taken out, nice thing about Patterson is he definitely seems like a rotation player, which is nice. You know, I wasn't even completely certain how many minutes he would be given, but I could certainly see him as a rotation type of guy, even if he's a backup five. Definitely can see him being used on a more consistent basis than I thought he would be, even coming in and being signed with the Clippers. So that's a good thing. But as far as the rotations, I think there's some ironing out to do. As far as whether Rome or Mann gets playing time, they definitely feel like another ball handler would be very, very good for this team. So I'm curious to see what happens going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't think it's an urgent situation. It's certainly not like Avery Bradley last year where it was just ridiculous that he was still starting and playing that many minutes. But I would remove Patterson from the starting lineup, possibly from the rotation, but definitely from the starting lineup, get Terrence Mann, you know, a handful of minutes a game to see what he can do on the defensive end and as a ball handler. But I don't have too much else to say about the games that have already been played. Coming up, the Clippers play the Hornets on Monday at home. They play Wednesday at Utah, Thursday against Spurs at home, and then Sunday against Utah again. Oh, wow. Kind of a tough schedule. The Spurs have played well so far. The Jazz have not, but they're still good. And in Utah, it's always a tough place to play. And the Hornets have been frisky. Do you have any thoughts about the upcoming schedule over the next week?
That's tough. I mean, I guess I'm sort of a pessimist. I think 2-2 is something that I could kind of see. 3-1 feels like it's what we should do because we could beat the Hornets. The Jazz at Utah will be tough, just altitude game. The Spurs, I feel like we should also beat. And then that Jazz game at home, with how the Jazz have played, I mean, you feel like you should get a win there, but I feel like there is some between the Spurs, and that's also a three. We have that's a 3 out of 4, right? Wait, so Wednesday, Thursday. Oh no, then we have Friday and Saturday off. So actually, it's not as bad as I thought.
Monday, Wednesday, Thursday is 3 and 4.
Monday, Wednesday, Thursday is 3 out of 4. So yeah, that Jazz game is very, very concerning because it's going to be our third game in 4 nights, and it's going to be against a well-coached team. That game probably is a kind of, not a trap game, because that's not really what a trap game is, but that seems like a schedule loss. That could be that case. So I think 3-1 would be optimistic, and 2-2 seems also something that could happen. What do you think, Rob?
I'd say 3-1. I think they'll probably drop one of either at Utah or home against San Antonio.
Right.
Though I also think Kawhi might go off against the Spurs.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, so...
Will he play that game?
Yeah, and I do wonder if it's going to be the Clippers' first back-to-back. It's also 3 games in 4 nights. I wonder if he sits or is load-managed one of at Utah or San Antonio. Wow. It'll be the first real load management test of the season. I mean, I know he has a minutes limit, and that I think they don't want him playing more than 35, and the ideal is around 31 or 32. But that's going to be the first real sign. Like, is he sat point blank period, or is he given maybe like 20 or 25 minutes? I think that'll be really interesting to see. For my money, it seems like he might play.
Feels like it.
But who knows? I mean, if they would rest him, I'm guessing it would be at Utah so that he could play against the Spurs in San Antonio. But we'll see.
That game's in L.A.
Oh, that's right. That's first in L.A.
Game. Yeah.
I think the Clippers go 3-1 this week. Utah has some things to sort out. I think they're going to take out all their pent-up Suns' frustration on the poor Hornets.
Good, please.
Yeah, and I really think they'll be able to beat down the Hornets pretty easily. So yeah, I think 3-1, 2-2 honestly wouldn't be bad. Like, it's not great, but
I think a 3-1 expectation for this team should be the expectation for this schedule. Yeah,
I agree. And I mean, I think 4-3 through the first 7 games is not wonderful. Certainly not a disaster. It's not great. 5-2 does look, it's just one game, but does look a bit better. But yeah, I don't think I really have anything else. We only have one Twitter question. Did you have anything else you want to get to before we go into the question and then wrap up?
Oh, my good friend Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is playing very well, and I'm watching him very closely, and it makes me sad. He had another good game today, 19-9-4, after getting 26 points and then 28 points. He's like 28-7-4 and like 3 blocks and 2 steals against the Wizards. He had the game tying shot before the Wizards just put them away with like a 14-2 run. And he like got really hyped and told the crowd to get into it. Shai looks so good this year, man.
He's going to average 20 points a game, I would guess.
That's so exciting. And I'm going to miss him. I'm going to mention Shai every once in a while on this podcast. I want people to think that I'm like pining or like upset I'm pining. I'm pining a little bit, but at the same time, I understand that we had to do what we had to do to get this team. But God, I'm going to, like, Shai is like such a good, he's just good. He's going to be Andy's so good.
Really fun. He's
just
really
a nice
fun.
Dude, too. Just like seems like a good kid. Good head on his shoulders. Says all the right things. Yeah, and he's just so much fun. He has all these trick shots. He's just like, he's going to be so good. It's just excited
yeah,
for him.
Yeah. It's
at the same time, I'm happy that he's going to just kick ass on the on
yeah,
the pot.
Yeah, he wouldn't be doing this if he was on the Clippers still. That's the thing. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, he's taking like at least 15 shots every game, and that just wouldn't happen if he was on the Clippers. He's handling the ball probably not as much as I would like because of Schroeder and Chris Paul, but he looks good. Gallo has been excellent for them, and he's been healthy, which is awesome to see as well. Chris Paul looks kind of washed.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Chris looks like he's checked out. I've watched a little bit of their games.
He looks old. He looks old and like he's ready to go somewhere else.
Woof.
But yeah, Shea is great. And yeah, the man to Shea comparisons were just
so bad.
I like Terrence Mann, but no.
If you didn't notice, like I really didn't give that any credence. Whenever that question came up, I was just upset. Like,
Terrence Mann, I think, will have a good NBA career, and I still don't know if he'll ever score 28 points a game.
Right. In a game.
Yeah, in a game. I kind of mumbled that. I think that's it for me. Yeah, we only have one question. So, Wamey giveaway. During the Lob City era, they had a tendency of not taking lottery teams seriously. One of those teams back in 2012-13, the Warriors ended up making the playoffs by winning the season series versus the Clippers. Well, Suns end up being the new Warriors. There's still a trap game problem with the Clippers. I don't think the Suns being the new Warriors, that's that is a very hot take.
Yeah. The Clippers shout out to Bryce out of the Sun. I hope somebody hears that question.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Suns being like the Clippers of last year, I can see. Sure. But them being the new Warriors is stretching it. And the trap game problem, I think it could be a problem this year. But really, we only have a one-game sample size, so I wouldn't go that far yet.
Yeah, is I wonder if they're going to count LeBron as a point guard with All-Star stuff this year? Because Booker, I mean, if the Suns are a 500 team, then Booker probably should be an All-Star, right? Like at the All-Star break, like
he's going to
he'll have the numbers, but then you know LeBron's going to be a point guard, and Westbrook and Harden will both be picks. What other guards are there out west that should be shoo-ins? Lillard will be easy pickings. So if those four are already guards that'll be in for sure, then it's going to be hard for Booker to get in. So, I mean, I hope that if the Suns are good, and even calling them a 500 team is a stretch.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if they're decent, then Booker should be an All-Star. So I hope that if they're good, that he gets some kudos, because it'd be a shame for him to miss out if this team is like half decent. Like he was great yesterday, and he's still gonna have to be great for them to be good. Plus, I mean, the thing about the Suns is they added three legit starters this offseason with Saric, Rubio, and Baines. And Baines, mm-hmm. I guess, might not start, but to me, he's like a legit starter on a good team.
Yeah.
So they're going to be better. They're going to be good. And I just wonder how good they're going to be. You know, I think we slept on them a bit, and I don't think they're going to be a playoff team by any means, but I think that they're going to be a tough out. They're going to have more wins like this the rest of the season against
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think they'll probably win around 30 games, which
compared
to the Suns the past few years is a huge success.
That's a start for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's probably it for me. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about, Chap?
I think that'll do it for this episode of the Law of the Gen, the podcast. I'm pretty much done. Get ready for your weekly Shea Yildiz Alexander updates, because they're probably coming. but aside from that, thanks for listening. Leave us a nice review on whatever platform you listen to us to. And as always, go Clippers!